I'm going to talk a little bit about our experience in Wisconsin using universal screening periods to assess chlamydia prevalence and risk among women and among older women attending our family planning clinics. Some of the issues that we have that, you know, we may think are unique to Wisconsin obviously are not unique to Wisconsin, but a little background. We've begun testing for chlamydia in Wisconsin family planning clinics in the 1980s, when I was still in high school. We used culture, then EIA and DFA. There were a lot of challenges in those early days in implementing a cohesive screening program. Obviously, limited resources. There was limitations to the technology. As we know, culture is not really the best for a statewide screening program. There was not a lot of data and not a lot of formal recommendations, and we have a very diverse population across Wisconsin. We have very urban areas, very rural areas. Some of the things that helped get it off the ground in the early days, though, were we did have good relationships starting to build between our providers and the lab and the program. And we had some very visionary early leadership. I don't know if any of you in this room know John Pfister, but that's probably a name some of you have heard. Our universal screening studies were first conceptualized in order to establish some evidence-based screening criteria in the early days of the screening program. The positivity we saw in those first studies helped to justify, you know, to the laboratory the expenditure of continued screening into the program. We've revisited those studies every 5 to 7 years or so to address lots of changes. You see changes in test technology and the cost of testing, the performance of the test. There's always, you know, changes in epidemiology, local data, demographics from clinic to clinic. Are we still capturing the patients that are at highest risk? Also then when national recommendations come out, we're asked if our, you know, screening criteria don't match those national recommendations, we have to answer the question, well, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that? And then we have some data that says, well, here's why. And hopefully people will listen to that. So what, when I say universal screening study, I'm talking about a period of universal testing and expanded data collection in a representative subset of family planning clinics. We try to select clinics across the state that will represent the population as best we can. Then we take those, the test results done, that are done, and match them with the patient and clinician questionnaire data that ask various behavioral, demographic, and clinical risk factor questions. That's kind of expanded over what we would be collecting on a, you know, normal visit. And we often use these universal screening studies as an opportunity to examine other program issues. We've compared assay performance, you know, validated certain types of specimens, things of that nature. So just a quick rundown of the various studies that we've done, periods of our universal screening. In 1985, we did in rural clinics, chlamydia, DFA, and gonorrhea culture. In 1986, we did the urban arm to that study using chlamydia and gonorrhea culture and also some EIA and DFA. In 1990, it was gonorrhea culture, chlamydia, EIA, and DFA. 1996 and 97, and this is the first one that I was around for, and it was also done concurrently with across Region 5. All the states in Region 5 did some form of universal screening that kind of established the regional screening criteria back in the day, I guess. And there we compared a couple of molecular methods to our EIA screening model. And in 2000 and 2001, I'm sorry, 2001 and 2002, we used the nucleic acid amplification test. We tested males and females, and we looked at chlamydia and gonorrhea. So data analysis in these studies over time led us to sort of a risk-first, age-later approach. In the early years, when we looked at just age, you would see, especially in the rural clinics, if you had an age cutoff, you would test a lot of negative people and get very low return. In the urban clinics, it performed a little bit differently. So it was examined pretty closely in all those studies, but it was only added as part of the selective screening criteria after the 2001-2002 studies. And I'll get more specific in a moment. A little bit about that data from the most recent universal screening study. During that time, we got, during the 7 months from those 10 clinics that were involved with the study, we received 8,108 specimens. Only 6,500 had complete data sets that agreed to participate in the study and gave us a questionnaire. So the participation rate, even just judging on the number of people tested during that time period, was not necessarily universal, but you know, we call it what we can. Almost 5,000 of those, about 75%, were under age 25. The positivity was 7.7%. 87.5% of them met the current screening criteria with a higher positivity rate, and then 12.5% of the tests in those younger women were outside, would have been outside of our selective screening criteria, with still about half the positivity rate. And the 1,664 patients, or 25% of the patients that were older, the positivity rate overall was 2.7%. A slightly higher proportion of those, or slightly lower proportion, would have met screening criteria, 2.8% positivity, and then a higher proportion of tests would have been done outside of criteria, which is a much lower positivity. The summary of the analysis of that data is a little complicated, but it's a little bit like what Holly showed, except for it starts at the bottom and goes to universal rather than starting with universal. And on the left side, you see the cumulative criteria approach, you know, first is contact, then contact plus symptoms or signs. Then it's those two plus the partner risk. And partner risk was defined as new partner, multiple partners, or patient with multiple partners. And in this study, interestingly, the yes response to that multiple patient or partner with multiple partners question and the don't know were both correlated, just like what you guys have seen. We also had to sort of split our sites into three kind of groups. We have our Milwaukee sites, which would be the most urban and the highest prevalence. Then we have a band of sites that kind of are in mid-sized cities. We kind of define them as over 35,000 population. And then the rural clinics. And different ways of looking at the data, you can kind of see we have the proportion of patients meeting the criteria, the proportion number of them that were positive, and then on the right side, the sensitivity or the percent of all positives that were detected. The criterion number 8 is what we decided to go with. Just a quick look, when you take Milwaukee and non-Milwaukee and compare them side by side, you can kind of see how different things end up looking. When the positivity is lower, when you start adding the older ages, you know, over 19, over 23, you start testing a lot more people and getting a lot fewer infections. It was kind of funny when David had his slide up there with all the different ages that are used across the 10 regions, I had to laugh about sub-regional criteria. We have sub-state criteria, and we have two ages in our own state. So we're kind of the other side. So where do you draw the line? And those two previous slides were kind of a little very distilled analysis of how we decided to draw the line where we did. We had to balance the positivity, various recommendations, risk factors, and a lot of measures of cost with the bottom line program budget. Sometimes the program people, you know, talk about, well, the testing is free because we do it in our lab, but from the lab I have to say, where do we get this free testing? We still have to buy kits, and we have a finite amount of money to do that. We had to consider the limitations of the study, the sample size, the participation rate was not perfect, and there is somewhat of an urban bias because we had more urban sites included, they had more positivity, so to balance those things out. And interestingly, again, state politics, I put that in quotes because it's not really exactly the right word, but you know, we have sort of the perception that Milwaukee is special and that the rest of the state gets neglected, and so trying to balance those issues definitely come into play. And the screening criteria need to be simple enough to use and accurate enough that it will be used while effectively targeting the program funds. So our current screening criteria should probably look pretty familiar because they're pretty similar to what's been dissected in previous talks. This is on the back of the test request form. The special age criteria is defined on a per clinic basis. There are two levels. The Milwaukee clinic screen everyone under 23 regardless of risk factors, and the semi-urban clinics use 19 currently. The lab request form and where we collect this information, there's a box that I have pictured here. And we do have a no box at the bottom, you know, no chlamydia criteria was met, and they can mark that. They used to have to have an X in one of these boxes in order to get, and they still do, in order to get an IPP supported test, they need to meet one of these screening criteria. But as I'll mention a little bit later, we, you know, the alternate funding sources kind of complicate this, and we're a little concerned that the data is not as good as it used to be, because the getting a free test is not necessarily dependent on them giving us the right criteria information. When we compare the 2001 Universal Screening Study data to just routine testing data or routine screening data from calendar year 2006, I think there's a couple of interesting things that we can see. The age across the bottom, in the Universal Screening Study, about 25% of the patients were over age 25, and during the routine screening in 2006, only 20% of the patients were over 25. So we did have some impact in reducing screening in the older age groups. And again, the alternate funding sources for committee testing, as was a comment from the audience, if you have a clinician who has, you know, who can get a free test, how do you convince them to stay on the screening criteria? This is a kind of just a summary of the 2006 data that was comparable to the one I gave you before. I don't know that we really need to go into it in any gory detail. It's not that much different, other than the fact that the reduction in screening in the older women, positivity rate goes up when you stick to the criteria, it goes down when you judge. Splitting it by age and focusing on the right-hand side of the graph, and my little white line was supposed to be at 3%, but it moved. So we saw a real drop in our positivity at 30, and that's where we dipped under the sort of magic 3% line, was at 30. And split by on-screening criteria versus off-screening criteria, the purple bars, the large ones, are the total number of tests done in that age group that are within the screening criteria. The light blue bars are the ones that are off-screening criteria. The red line is positivity within the screening criteria, and the blue line is positivity outside of the screening criteria. And again, we can see that, you know, the screening criteria do give us a higher positivity, and we do the bulk of the testing within the screening criteria. This graph and the previous one, and some of these slides I'm going to be presenting to our family planning clinics via teleconferences, we do regularly twice a year to try to, you know, give them an update with their data, and I think they will find this interesting, where the blue line kind of bottoms out. Really not a lot of point to screening older women who don't meet screening criteria in Wisconsin. One interesting thing that I found when I was looking at the younger women versus older women, was regardless of the initial positivity, traditionally Milwaukee is always way higher than the rest of the state, and the red line in the top graph is the positivity in Milwaukee in the younger women, and then the blue line is the older women. And in both these graphs, the take-home message is really, no matter where the positivity started, in the older women it converged, especially off the screening criteria. It was around 2% in the rural clinics, in the mid-sized cities, and in Milwaukee. So that was a little bit of a surprise. We've never really seen anywhere where Milwaukee wasn't head and shoulders above the other clinics, but in older women who didn't meet screening criteria, the positivity was uniformly pretty low. So we're about to embark on yet another universal screening study in Wisconsin, and the current, you know, challenges that we're facing, of course, we're always needing to do more with less. We have a family planning Medicaid waiver in Wisconsin, which allows free testing without the requirement of meeting our selective screening criteria. So again, how do we convince clinicians not to test the lower risk patients when there is funding that they can access? I mean, it seems strange to be thinking about an alternate source of funding as a bad thing. And that's not really the impression I want to give, but it just does make things a little more complicated and makes interpreting the data a little bit more difficult. We do have an increased emphasis on reducing the screening in the older women, especially the low yield off criteria testing. So our goals, we want to increase that participation so it's a little bit more universal. In order to do that, we have a clinic-based nurse practitioner study coordinator. We're hoping that will allow us to do some better training for the clinic staff and ways to present the study to the patients, and to allow us to streamline the clinic procedures so that the study questionnaire collecting and the extra specimen collecting doesn't derail and give us less than universal. We also have improved our questionnaire. We tried to simplify some of the questions, and we asked the clinicians for input into new, potentially new criteria questions, because we're trying to get at those positives that are outside the screening criteria. There's still positivity out there. And also to get at why they're selecting patients to test outside the screening criteria. And we got some really good feedback, which led us to add some questions on, you know, in addition to just the clinical questions that the practitioner's going to answer, we're going to ask them, you know, would you be inclined to test this patient outside screening criteria, and if yes, why? And the blue bullets are the ones that they've given us as reasons why they do test outside of screening criteria. Their risks were outside of the time frame. They didn't feel that the history provided was reliable. There were some other random reasons, and we wanted to see if we could sort of rate the clinician's impression of the patient and see how accurate they are, if there are factors that we can sort of, maybe it's a way to calculate the effectiveness of the gut feeling testing that the clinicians are doing. So that's kind of new for this study. So in summary, we have found that universal screening studies can provide data needed to support the use of the selective screening criteria. In Wisconsin, we've used locally derived screening criteria that identifies women over age 25 that are at increased risk of chlamydia infection, but that can certainly be improved. And that women over 25 without risk criteria are a very small proportion of our chlamydia tests, and the positivity is very low, even in high prevalence areas. Using local data to determine the selective screening criteria may require different criteria for different areas of the state, and I guess, you know, that's one way to look at it. Other programs maybe go in the other direction, but it can be more complex for the program. But at the clinic level, they only have one set to follow, so it's not like they have to do, oh, it's under 19 and it's under 23. That doesn't impact them, and that's why we didn't put the number, the age, on the lab request form. We just say special age criteria, because if the rural clinics know that other clinics get to use it 19, and then, you know, they start marking boxes, and sometimes they even draw a little box and put an X in it and write a criteria on there, and so we try to put that to a minimum. We in the past have been able to use sort of a financial incentive, being you get a free test if your patient meets screening criteria, but the alternate sources of funding can sometimes complicate that and our ability to monitor it. We can change provider behavior, but it doesn't happen so soon. I guess that's really all I want to say. Are there any questions? Yes, Tom? They're higher than the on criteria in the older women. But there's way, 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 way more of them, too. So broadening it to that level outright would break the bottom line, which is why we haven't done it yet. As a result of the study we're about to do, we may be able to target that to certain areas. And definitely when you compare the 4% to the 2.7%, it's like, well, why aren't we testing where the morbidity is? But we may get there. We found it's easier to add testing than it is to take it away. So we've always sort of been incrementally adding. Thank you. Next week, yeah.